The seasons of your life are always moving forward. Singlehood, marriage, parenting. And through it all, Focus on the Family is alongside you with encouragement from a biblical perspective. And now we have a new tool that gathers our trusted guidance and support together in one place, the Enhanced Focus on the Family app. With it, you can listen to the Focus on the Family broadcast, engage our social media, or make a donation. Download it today from the App Store or Google Play.
As we bond with our kids and hang out with our kids and they get to know us, they're going to glean so much from us. They're going to glean so many values that sometimes that rule of go to bed at this time or, you know, can't download this app with it isn't going to teach them.
Jonathan McKee joins us today on Focus on the Family. I'm John Fuller, and your host is Focus President and author Jim Daly.
All right, John, have you ever done something that you weren't really sure about and thought to yourself, man, I wish I could do a do-over?
Pretty much every day of my life these
Come
days.
Come on,
it
that's
seems.
Too
I
hard.
Mean, I yell at the kids. I say something to somebody. I mean, it's not like I've blown it totally today, but there are moments today I'd like to relive.
I think all of us have had that situation, maybe several times a day, maybe every once in a while. But when it comes to parenting, I think a lot of us, if we're honest, we would want to do a do-over here or there. I just had it last night, man. Trent spilled a drink in my car, and I was not happy. I had to slip a note under the door saying, I'm so sorry, I love my interior of my car more than you last night, so please forgive me for not being the happiest person when you spilt your Coke in my
it's
car.
It's okay, you can let it out
yeah,
here.
Kind of,
it's
thank
a
you
safe
for the
place.
Therapy. But that would have been a little chance for a do-over. But today we want to talk about that when it comes to parents wanting a do-over. For those of us that are still in that role, let's hear from someone who's been through it and can point the way to those moments when maybe you can get it right the first time.
Yeah, and our guest today is going to help us learn how to do battle well and get through it all. Jonathan McKee is with us. He is very candid about his share of parenting flubs, as he calls them, and he wants to help us, and I'm saying us because I'm here. I need this content so much,
Jim. I'm glad you're saying this,
John. He wants to help us learn to become better and wiser as we help our kids become adults. He's got over 20 years of youth ministry experience. Jonathan speaks to parents and leaders and teens worldwide, and he and his wife, Lori, have three adult children.
Jonathan, welcome back to Focus.
Oh, so glad to be here.
Okay, we got to start with the question. What's the biggest do-over you would want to have?
Oh, man. You know, I think for me, and there are so many, I'm right there with you hearing you guys talk about this, but it's probably much like incidents, like you say, like, you know, something dumb, like a spill or a whatever, you know, where I just, you know, let my temper get the best of me. And well, I remember moments like that.
Let me ask you this, because some of that is born out of our family of origin. I mean, that's what you learn as a child from your parents' parenting capability. We bring a lot of that into our parenting, don't we? And even to the point where your kids someday will say to you, you're just like grandpa or you're just like grandma. And you go, cringe.
Well, I mean, we can teach what we know, but we can only reproduce who we are. And so, I mean, it is as parents, I mean, we could, you know, have all kinds of rules and all kinds of stuff, but inevitably they're going to be watching us. And that's the scary thing. If we handle situations a certain way, which, you know, inappropriate, that's probably how they're going to handle those situations.
So in your speaking and talking to thousands of parents about their flubs, as you call them, what's the most common flub?
Well, you know, this is one of those things where I started to hear the same thing over and over again, because as I was asking parents, like at my workshops, and I started to hear the same thing where a lot of parents were kind of saying, man, I wish I would have done this. And I think the interesting thing to me was we don't have a lot of venues where parents can share this. I mean, think about it. There's not a lot of places where parents just get together and go, hey, I messed up the other day. It's kind of embarrassing. Sometimes it's private stuff. You don't want to talk about how you know, lost your temper and started yelling at your kids or whatever it is you did. So I found when I saw these venues, like you'd be at a church where all of a sudden they'd have like a gathering of parents for a Sunday school class, and you'd have like a panel of parents up on stage sharing some of this stuff. I noticed that parents were like, I mean, pens were out. They were taking notes, because whenever a parent says, I wish if I had a chance to do it over again, I would do this. Man, everybody's paying full attention. So when I saw this and noticed that, man, this is good information. What if we harnessed a bunch of the information. So I started asking parents, and I asked literally hundreds of parents personally at parent workshops, did posts to my readers and stuff. I said, come on, share. What is it? If you could do one thing over again, what would you do over? And the answers started to come in, and overwhelmingly the number one answer in however they worded it came out something like, I wish I would have spent more time with my kid.
More time.
I wish I would have hung out with my kid. Wish I would have put my kid to bed more, and actually instead of saying goodnight from downstairs, you know, I wish I would have actually showed up at their stuff more. I wish I would have, you know, instead of watching them play in the ocean from the sand, I wish I would have gone in the ocean with them. Over and over again, that was the overwhelming answer. By far, nothing came close.
Well, that's the end of the program then, John. I mean, we know what to do. Spend more time.
Yeah.
You talked in your book about bonding and boundaries, and you're alluding to that right now. But I love that common word phrase because that helps keep it simple for me as a dad. Bonding and boundaries. What's the conflict and what do we do with it?
Yeah. I mean, they're both very important elements in parenting and in any parenting relationship. A lot of us obviously, we'll have boundaries with our kids. They're important. That's when we're telling them, you know, hey, you know, you need to go to bed at this time, or sorry, no phone in the bedroom, or whatever those rules are. But bonding is that time where we're hanging out with our kids, we're talking with our kids, we're laughing over pizza, you know, and that kind of stuff. And both these are very important. But it's funny, if you think about it, most parents, even listening, they immediately start kind of thinking, and most of us gravitate towards one or the other a little more. You know, some of us are just better at the hanging out, not so good at the, you know, imposing any boundaries. Some of us, we tend to gravitate more towards the boundaries. And my point in that chapter in talking about that is that I think we should tip the scales towards the bonding. And don't get me wrong, I'm not saying don't have boundaries. I'm not saying let your kids do whatever you want. I'm just saying if me personally, for example, I let my boundaries hinder my bonding. Because when I would walk in a room, it was very much, I was the parole officer. I was like, hey, feet off the couch. You know, what are you doing? What are you watching? And you could just even see it. The expression on their faces is they're kind of like, uh-oh, what am I doing wrong? And I think the thing that a lot of parents aren't thinking about is, you know, if mom and dad don't have a relationship with their kids, then most likely they're going to glean values from other sources. And
well,
it's
scary. Let me tease that out a little bit, because I think so often the Lord draws opposites together. Not always, and I know we're going to hear from somebody, John, who says, my husband and I are very similar. I get that. 80-20 rule would probably apply here. Where you're opposite. Certainly true of Gene and I. And a boundary parent doesn't look too kindly on a bonding parent. And vice versa. You know, a bonding parent has a problem with boundary parenting. How do you talk that through, you know, when you put your head on the pillow at night and you guys are struggling with something and you are all about bonding? Well, you're all about boundaries.
Yeah, and it would be difficult too, because I'm sure that the boundary parent would be like, you know, you're always the good guy because you always just get to hang out,
you
have
just want fun,
you know, and this kind of stuff. And that's why both parents need to be on board with this, you know, because both parents need to kind of understand that both are important. And you're right. Some people gravitate towards one or the other. But I would go as far as to even tell that boundary parent that if that's all you are, you might need to even go on a boundary fast.
Well, let me ask you this too, though. Who gets to assess whether that's all you are? The child or you, the parent,
I always ask parents. I say, think about it. I mean, our listeners right now are probably thinking, you know, which one are you? And I ask them, I say, which one would your kids say you are? Forget what you say you are. Which one would your kids say
you are?
Well,
that's the point. Yeah, I think exactly. If you ask your kids, they'll tell you.
Yeah. And you know what? That's a good discussion to have.
Of course, no. Then the parent says, well, that's not accurate. You start arguing with the child.
Well, and the thing is, as we start thinking about this, I think parents sometimes think, okay, boundaries are where I'm going to teach my kids, because if I can regiment some of these disciplines in their lives, that's where they're going to learn. And my point is just to kind of raise awareness that, you know, so much of what our kids are going to learn is because when they're hanging out with us, they're going to see how we treat that waitress, how we treat, you know, how we react in anger, how we do this. And as we bond with our kids and hang out with our kids and they get to know us, they're going to glean so much from us. They're going to glean so many values that sometimes that rule of go to bed at this time or, you know, can't download this app with it isn't going to teach them.
Let me throw you this one. Huh? Is God a boundary God or a bonding God?
Well, we're looking at the God who looked down at us on earth and decided himself to come down, become flesh, you know, God incarnate, and dwell among us. He walked and rubbed shoulders with us. And he was out there connecting with people. And when he met with the most hideous of sinners, his reaction wasn't a bunch of rules. His reaction was to have a conversation with them. And he wasn't okay with their sin, but he was okay to say, hey, I don't care where you've been. I care where you're going. And that relational God who wants a relationship with us, you know, all through the scripture, we see that love is this resounding theme that, you know, we can know everything and prophesy and this and that, but if we don't have love, we've got nothing. So relationships are obviously of a very high value.
Well, and I think when you look at it that way, I think bonding is what provides healthy boundaries and respect for those boundaries. I think it was Josh McDowell who said, you know, rules without relationship lead to rebellion. Yeah. And that's a beautiful way to say that. I'll say it again in case you want to write it down when you're listening there, but rules without relationship lead to rebellion. And it's so true, isn't it?
Well, absolutely. And before people start calling in and complaining, you know, I am not saying, you know, don't have any rules whatsoever. As a matter of fact, you know, if you get later in the book, you'll sit there and see where I start talking about, hey, what's it like to have a social media presence in your kids' lives and stuff? And some kids will even say, whoa, wait a second, you know, turning off my phone at night, you know, oh, I can have Instagram if you have Instagram with me and are my friend. You know, I'm very for being in your kids' life and being a part of this and having boundaries. My point on the bonding and boundaries is simply, let's tip the scales towards bonding.
Mm. Well, Jonathan McKee is our guest today on Focus on the Family, and it's a pleasure to have him back to talk about his book, If I Had a Parenting Do-Over, 7 Vital Changes I'd Make. And we've got copies for you at focusonthefamily.com/broadcast. And Jonathan, my experience has been that I'm a boundaries guy. I've learned to let go and to really try to dial into the bonding aspects, the relational aspects. But age has something to do with this as well, doesn't it? I mean,
the parents' age or the kids' age?
Well, I'm thinking the kids' age. So, you know, 2, 3, 4, there are a lot of external rules because so much of life has to be learned. When they hit the teens, you got to kind of let go. But it's harder to find a commonality. I mean, you want to play a board game tonight? No. So, you know, finding the relational time in activity is kind of hard for us.
Yeah, and that was our conversation last time I was on the show, talking about finding these venues to connect, especially with kids that can't pry their eyes from their mobile devices. That is tough, but it is interesting how we as parents, especially as our kids get older, when I asked parents, empty nesters, parents with kids that were seniors and juniors, by far the one regret they had was not having as much of that hangout time. As a matter of fact, less than 2% of people that responded actually said something like, I wish I had more boundaries. Mm. Less than 2%. The majority of them were like, I should have hung out more. So that's where I'm a big advocate of saying, look for these venues.
So you're saying it's not really a matter of the child's age. Go for relationship as much as possible.
Well, absolutely. And this is much easier when you've got a 6 and an 8-year-old because you're your kid's hero and they're like, yeah, hang out with daddy. You know, but when you're 16 and 18, it is like, whatever, you know. And that's what we've got to look for those moments. I mean, that's why I wrote that book all about, you know, all those different ways to connect with your smartphone-obsessed kid. It's we've got to look for those moments because they occur day to day. And sometimes that family dinner time, you know, where you're saying no tech at the table. And that's a time where literally dad doesn't have his phone. And, you know, if we can look for those venues where those kinds of connections occur, we need to maximize those.
Well, and another thing that I liked in your book, If I Had a Parenting Do-Over, 7 Vital Changes I'd Make, was to say yes as often as you can. Someone that used to work here at Focus, Clark Miller, used to say that often, say yes. That was his parenting do-over.
Well, that's one of the things that's kind of a look back for me with my older kids. I remember, honestly, embarrassing times where, you know, hey, Dad, you want to play Xbox? Or and me kind of saying, hey, I'm busy. And by the time I got to my youngest, and sadly, it really was by the time I got to my youngest, I remember just making an oath to myself, I don't care how busy you are, Jonathan. You know, because my other two were out of the house. I'm like, if my youngest, who is now a junior, comes up, and there was times I remember a stack on my desk to the ceiling, you know, an inbox so full, and I had to leave the next day and all this different stuff. And my daughter coming up and asking, you know, hey, you want to go to lunch? And the only natural answer would be, I just absolutely don't have time. And I had made an oath and I was like, yes. And I share experiences like that in the book where I just remember saying yes on a day where I didn't have time and looking back and going, wow, that was one of those amazing moments. And it was because of saying yes.
Yeah, and as a parent of teens, you talked about the coat incident of 2012. Let's get right to it.
I love that a parenting redo moment is actually worthy of a title.
Yes.
And that's in my chapter that I called Let It Go. Because, see, one thing you mentioned, John, about the age is, you know, not only do they not want to hang out with us as much, you know, as our kids, you know, grow into adolescence and become teenagers, you know, they are just vying for independence, you know. And the thing that's so hard is, as parents, no matter what we do, very often, you know, we can walk in and say, you know, oh, it's a beautiful day. Well, actually, not really. I've had better, you know, they want to just argue with everything you say, you know, and you're like, what is wrong with you? You know, and this is, I mean, any parent of teenager knows. I mean, it's the most humbling experience ever being a parent of a teenager.
Well, it's hard to be wrong so long
all
and
the
so
time.
Often.
I mean, we are so stupid and they are so smart, you know, and to live with such geniuses in the house is so rough. And you know, it's hard because as a parent who knows better, there's times. And that particular instance, my daughter was walking down the stairs and it's January, it's freezing outside. And I said, apparently the most cruel words you could ever say as a parent. I said, where's your coat? and that just started it right there, because she was like,
I don't need a coat.
Yeah. She I don't need a coat. And I was like, hey, there was frost on all the cars outside. You could see your breath. The cat is frozen solid on the back lawn. Get your coat. And it started World War III. I mean, just, you know, because I thought to myself, you know, this is one of those things where I'm just going to put the foot down.
This is the hill to die on.
Yeah. And looking back, that's one of those moments where I'm like, Jonathan, let it go. It's a coat. What's the worst that's going to happen? She's going to go to school. She's going to be so cold that she's going to realize, dang, I really should have brought a coat today.
Well, in that context, though, I mean, you're speaking truth. I'm feeling it. I don't know if you are, John.
I know had that conversation not too long ago.
Many of you listening are feeling it as well, because we dig in as parents and it becomes more about the principle than it does the moment. Well, I want you to wear a coat because you're going to get cold. I know it. Obviously, you don't know it, but you're going to take it. No matter what.
And if we can learn to spot these moments, we'll think ahead and we'll ask ourselves, okay, honestly, is this some, you know, moral value that she's violating here, you know, not wearing a coat?
Or a life and death issue.
So often these are things that they actually could learn on their own. And I can't tell you how many parents that I surveyed, they came back and they said, I wish I would have let my kids feel the consequences of their own behavior more, instead of jumping in and saving them. And that was one of those moments. And letting it go, I heard this one parent say this, and I'll never forget it. This one parent said, if I had a chance to do it over again, I wouldn't sweat the small stuff. And the way he said it was so smart. He actually said, sometimes they would do something and the very act of correcting became so tedious and problematic that it created more of a problem than the original infraction. And as soon as he said that, I recognized it, because I'm like, I do that all the time in my house. It's something dumb, like, you know, I told him to floss and he brushed his teeth, but he didn't floss or whatever. And it became World War III. And it's like, you know what? And honestly, it's like, wait, what was this about again? Oh, yeah, flossing.
Yeah. So, and in your book, you mention these things, let it go, which is a great principle. It's probably the hardest for me. I don't know about you, John, but letting it go can be one of the most difficult, because there's a principle at stake here. Like, let's keep the garage clean. Sorry to bring that one up.
That's one that comes up all the time.
Another one that you have is press pause.
Yeah.
It seems like I understand that. What are you getting at?
Well, that one hits home, and that's where I get a little vulnerable, just because as I look back, I mean, if there's one do-over I could do, it's times where I looked where I lost my cool. And it's amazing how many other parents I heard share stories of where they said, I just let my temper get the best of me. And it's funny how whenever we look back in those moments, we're like, okay, here's what I should have done. Once I thought about it. And so what I really propose in this book is, you know, you've always heard people say the advice of count to 10. Well, man,
it's not the thing you naturally go to.
I don't know if it's my Irish temper or what, but counting to 10 to me is a countdown to blast off. Right? You know, that's just, I just get more mad. To me, it's probably count to like a million or whatever.
Try 100.
And it's up there for me. And pressing pause for me was one of those things where I had to kind of learn you know, that delay was so crucial. And if there was something, if there was even one of those violations, it was like maybe a moral violation, you know, they lied, they snuck something on their phone or whatever. Being able to take the moment and say, I'll tell you what, you know what, I've got to think about this. So here's what I want you to do. I want you to put your phone on the dining room table, and I want you to go up to your room, and we're going to talk about this later. And don't give it. They might be like, no, we're going to do it. It's like, no, we're going to talk about this later. And having that one moment of wisdom to be able to press pause like that, that gives you a chance to think it over. And here's the cool thing. Most of us need that time. Most of us, after we blow it, we look back later and go, oh, here's what I should have said.
Yeah.
Well, why not take that time in the first place? And that's one of those things I wish I would have done. I wish I would have just pressed pause.
Yeah. The other one I like is the idea of ending with questions. Mm-hmm. I've tried to do that more so. Just remain calm and ask a question. Role play that for us out of your own experience as a dad. Where would those questions, how did you start to build questions into your dialogue rather than just statements or observations your room's dirty?
Well,
would you say, your room, it's really dirty. How long will it be that way?
and in my chapter, which I call Add a Question Mark, the point I really try to make is instead of constantly telling them what to do, tell them you should do this, ask them what they should do. You know, put, and the thing is, I still lead them to the decision. Instead of telling them decision, lead them to the decision. Yeah. And as they become, now, and here's the thing, again, I've got a whole chapter that's talking about incremental independence. I call it the segue. And it's when they're young, there's going to be a lot more guidelines, and we are going to be telling them a lot more of what to do. But as they get older and they're starting to vie for independence, that's when we need to start leading them towards these decisions, because we ourselves have our eyes on the fact that, hey, when they turn 18, they could go join the Marines, they could be in a college dorm, and they're going to be making these decisions for themselves. Are we equipping them for that day? Mm-hmm. So a lot of this Add a Question Mark is leading them to the decision. So if they ask, hey, Dad, can I go to the drive-ins this Friday?
Say, the drive-in.
Yeah. And believe it or not, we actually
there
have
still
drive-ins.
Seven left in the
we
United
have
States.
Drive-ins in Sacramento, and my kids actually wanted to go to those drive-ins, which I thought was really cool because I used to like doing it. And so if my kids, hey, can I go to the drive-ins this Friday? And wherever it is, whatever that thing is that they want, I would sit there and go, well, I don't know much about what, tell me about it. And that's what I do, gather more information. Well, what do you think you should do? If you don't know the answer, well, what do you think you should do? Why should I let you go? I mean, honestly, have them basically present the case. Mm. Add a question mark to it. Don't just say no. Lead them to that decision.
You also talk about the need to let go. And you've got three that have you've launched them.
Yeah.
How did you and your wife, Lori, how did you truly let go? And was that harder for her than it was for you, or vice versa?
Well, first of all, I'll say that this doesn't end. I mean,
letting go isn't exactly.
My girls are, my son's on his own. My girls are still in college. I've got one that's a senior, one's a sophomore as we talk right now. And I tell you, they come back, for holidays and this and that. And we have to every day remember this. And now we've got these young adults. I've got a 19-year-old, so I've got one teenager left in the house. And I've got a 21-year-old who know everything, by the way.
Yeah.
And there's times where they're vying for this independence. And we have to remind ourselves, this is a good thing.
I've got to get the three essential tools because I think that was pretty funny. You talked about duct tape. And assuming, is that for the parent or for the child?
Yeah, no, exactly. Well, and that's,
I just thought I'd ask.
Well, no, and that's in my chapter about noticing our kids and taking the time to notice them. Because for a lot of parents, the idea of noticing is, oh, well, let me get that nanny cam with the camera so I can see what they're doing. Or let me, get that spyware software so I can sit there and go, oh, okay, he's at the drugstore. He's in aisle 5, and they're like following every move.
And some parents are saying, what's wrong with that?
Yeah, and my principle that looking back, again, you've got hundreds of parents who are looking back in their parenting and they're saying, okay, I think I concentrated so much on boundaries. I didn't let my kids make enough of these decisions. And in this chapter, I simply said, hey, we need to notice our kids. And that's not through spyware or spying on them. Noticing our kids is putting our own phone down and going and spending time with our kids. And the duct tape principle is simply, as parents, so often, I've heard it so many times, parents will come up to me and say, my kid won't even talk with me. And I say, well, tell me what that looks like. And as these parents share, they say, well, I say, well, honestly, what's it typically look like when they come home? And they'll share what it's like when it comes home. And it's kind of like, would you finish your homework? Did you finish your chores? Did you finish this? And I'm like, well, are you a parent or a parole officer? And very often it's just this you know, this, and they're like, my kids won't talk. And I say, well, why don't you talk with them about something? And again, let's switch from boundaries and go over to bonding. What's something that just would be fun just hanging out with your kids? Something, what do they enjoy? And in a lot of moments of candid, just vulnerability and honesty, parents will say, in all honesty, I don't know what my kids' interests are. And that's where the point of noticing is, hey, why don't we put duct tape over our mouth and why don't we just listen to our kids? Why don't we observe them? And as a youth worker, this is something we youth workers, we use all the time. We just ask a lot of questions and we watch. And I tell you, you know, when I go and speak to a group of kids, I will sit there and I will literally just lean up against a wall and I will observe kids and I will watch what they're doing. I will watch what they're wearing. I will, and as moms and dads, if our kids are, you know, if we're in a carpool, we can listen, we can hear what they're talking about. And this is so important because it will give us some springboards for conversations we can have with our kids.
Jonathan McKee, fascinating discussion. You have really done your homework and you're good at communicating the important things that parents need to keep their eyeballs on. The one that is screaming at me today is try to be present, spend time with your children, and they'll want to spend time with you. And the other one for me is just to say yes. I mean, I like you, can give every excuse as to why I'm too busy. And you got to be able to make room, make it a priority to say yes to your children, to do the things, because it goes by fast. You know, Dr. Dobson used to say that. I'm living it now. I know it. Yeah. It goes by so fast, those 3 years, those 5 years, and bang, they're gone. So I so appreciate your perspective, and thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, so glad to be here.
And again, Jonathan's book is called If I Had a Parenting Do-Over, 7 Vital Changes I'd Make, and you can get your copy at focusonthefamily.com/broadcast, or call 800, the letter A, and the word family. And let me ask you to consider making a generous donation when you get in touch with us. The pandemic has affected so many of us. I'm sure you've felt the impact, but Focus on the Family's donations have been down a little bit, and couples and parents are reaching out to us here. We remain committed to helping and meeting as many needs as we can, but that decrease in giving is making it kind of difficult. So we could really use your support right now to continue providing answers and assistance to precious families that need help. When you make a financial contribution of any amount to the ministry today, we'll send a complimentary copy of Jonathan's book as our way of saying thanks for joining the support team. You can donate, get help, and get the book when you call 800, the letter A, and the word family. We'll have a great weekend and plan to join us again on Monday as Dr. Marcus Warner and Chris Corsi explain the role of joy in marriage and why friendship with your spouse is so important.
Friendship is the foundation of a really good marriage. You want to be good friends. And if you're not playing together, are you really friends?
That's next time on Focus on the Family. And remember, when you get in touch, let us know how you're listening on our website, through our mobile app, or on our podcast feed. I'm John Fuller, and on behalf of Jim Daly and the entire team, join us next time as we help you and your family thrive.
With all that's happening in the world right now, you may be looking for ways to both entertain and encourage your family. We would like to help you do just that by giving you a 28-day free trial of the Adventures in Odyssey Club, where you can find our back catalog of Adventures in Odyssey programs. These exciting episodes are a great way to keep you and your family connected to truth as you continue to navigate through significant changes to your lives. So go to AIOclub.org and get started on your free 28 days of Adventures in Odyssey. That's AIOclub.org.